Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And then at the end of the day, I mean, it doesn't depend on how many problems you've got, it depends on how long you hold on to it.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Torrin Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with successful property investor and accountant, David Wu. Join us as we delve into the many properties he's invested into, the power of investing in property, the importance of holding long-term, and much, much more. First off, Wu tells us a little bit about what he does.
I'm a chartered accountant in private practice. Basically, I have a practice in the Sydney CBD, accounting and tax. I've got two business partners. Been in practice since 1997, so 20-odd years. Well, we do a lot of tax return work, but my expertise and favorite is in tax planning, tax advisory, especially in the property-related matters in relation to tax.
And he shares what a typical day looks like for him. A
typical day start with, coming back to the office, I read a financial review. That's very important because I need to apprise of what's happening in the financial world. And even though I'm an accountant, I need to broaden my knowledge and view on all aspects on financial matters. And then I obviously hit the email and then see whether there's email that I need to attend to urgently. And then I follow my plan. I've got a day list. So what you need to do, etc. The night before, I list down what needs to be done. And then I go to look at the job list, review some of the jobs. As I told you before, I'm looking at the tax return, so I'm getting out of the way. And then I spend the other good part of the day looking at how to make sure that clients are being serviced. I have this, not sure whether you heard about that, the red activity, blue activity, and black activities. So red activities are those that's basically not really productive, like looking at administration. The blue are the one that is actual charging the client by reviewing the files, etc. And then the black activities are the one that's basically marketing to train staff and then to make sure that we have a plan in place to bring in new client and then to generate fees. So I spend a lot of time in doing that sort of black activities.
In regards to this color system Wu uses for dividing up his tasks, he tells us where he learned it from and a little more about it.
I learned from someone else. Yeah, I actually, it's not original from me. I have to pay credit to those. I don't know who invented it. But then look at it. When a lot of us just... These are the three main activity. The one that is generating your income instantly, which is the blue. The one that is not generating income as such, that's overhead, your chit-chatting, the admin. The one that is potentially generating income in the future, the black activity. So depending on how you focus on those, a lot of people just focus on the blue one, which is good, generating income instantly, but then you have to look at longer-term plan where you can get some income in the future.
Wu goes on to tell us about his upbringing, what he did after high school, and when he immigrated to Australia.
I was born in Hong Kong and then raised up there, and then typical middle-class family. My parents, they are businessman doing some import-export trade. So in a way, we have a family of six. I'm the eldest one. I've got two brothers and one younger sister. So we are quite lucky because we are, from our start, we are being looking up, being looked after by the parents. We are being have good education. I mean, and then we have a lot of good clothing, and then live in good environment. We can't say that we're very rich, but we're middle class, typical Hong Kong people. So yeah, and then I study science in my high school, and then wanted to go into the medicine to study doctor, but I failed my university entrance exam, so I couldn't get into medicine, get into science. And then after graduate in 83, I study a master's degree and doing some research work in Hong Kong. And at that time, and then the family, my father planned to migrate over here because of, at that time, they have the problem with the 1997 of China taking over Hong Kong. So my parents were also afraid of that political situation. So we, so he applied for migration, and we got visa, the Berlin visa, and then we migrated here in 1986. And then once I'm in Australia, I wanted to continue my science work, but then not much opportunity there, so I switched into accounting. So a bit of a big change.
Although most of Wiz's family decided to stay in Australia, not all of them did.
Well, my parents stay, obviously because of the business connection. It's just that for us, we have to come over here to study. And then now all brothers and sisters, they are here, but my parents are still in Hong Kong. Obviously, they prefer the way of life over there. So all of me and my brothers and sisters, they are all citizens, but my parents, they are still holding a permanent resident visa only because they didn't spend enough time here to get a citizenship.
With the current situation in Hong Kong with the Chinese government, Wu tells us as to whether his parents are considering moving elsewhere.
It's a mixed feeling. So obviously they wanted to stay there because of the connections and of the relatives there, and then the language, and then the environment. On the other hand, there come a point where the protests in Hong Kong getting more severe and then affecting not only the, you know, the day-to-day, affecting the day-to-day life of every people, ordinary people. So they are seriously thinking of coming over here to stay for good.
Schooling in Hong Kong for Wu was a little different from how schools operate in Australia.
At that time, back in my days, they have actually 13 years. So 6 years is primary school. And in high school, we call Form 1 to Form 7. So that means 7 plus 6 is 13. So Form 1 and to Form 6 is equivalent to the Year 7 to Year 12 here. And then the Form 7, which is, they call it a pre-matriculation school year, that's preparing you for the university. So that means that we have put 7 years of high school. So the system in Hong Kong is very much so-called spoon-feeding. So it's just, you know, a lot of focus on academic, not much as a diverse, broad-based teaching as in Australia. And then every people just doing a lot of study work, tuition, and just want to get into the elite university of Hong Kong, and in Chinese University of Hong Kong. And at that time, the only two universities, which is, you know, famous, which is Chinese University and Hong Kong University. So a lot of people spend a lot of time, money, effort in trying to get into those prestigious universities.
When he was in Hong Kong, Wu did work a little before he came to Australia and decided to pursue further studies.
Yeah, I worked a little bit in my father's company to help him out in the import-export trading. When I was young, I had always had the intention to succeed my family's to help him out. But then I find it to be quite difficult because my interest is not in that area. So I, after studying my master in Hong Kong, which is also science, I just have the opportunity to come over here to explore, to see what opportunities open to me. And then I find it, okay, the science, and then you can either do further research or you go to do teaching work. And at the time, not that many opportunities. So I look at around and, okay, may as well do a master's degree in commerce, which is a degree that did not require any commerce first degree. So if you have a science background, you can still do a master in commerce. So to give you, to give me some knowledge into the accounting and business world. So I then did, it's only a two-year course, it's UNSW Master of Commerce. So I did that one in 87, 88. So then I find it to be quite interesting in that area, so I choose accounting because obviously accounting is the basic of everything. So once you know accounting, then you can branch into a lot of areas, know the numbers and finance and what have you.
Whilst he was studying, Wu decided not to obtain a part-time job because of the mindset he grew up with.
At the time, I was full-time study, and then I with hindsight, I would have been better if I get some job opportunity. But then, being from Hong Kong, the mindset is okay, study, and then you can't find a job. So we don't have the mentality of doing part-time job and doing part-time study. So, and also on my, as I said, my background is relatively comfortable, and then we don't need to work in order to get a living. So, but that's good and bad, because obviously that means I don't have the exposure of getting some real life experience in work, which is totally different from what you learn at school and uni.
He tells us a bit about where he lived with his siblings when he first moved to Australia.
We're living one house together, and then obviously when we migrated here, we don't know everybody. So my father bought a house near my uncle in the southern area in Blackhurst near Hurstville. So we all lived together in one house, and then it was a very big house, so a lot of things to look after, to clean, to do a lot of stuff. And then obviously in Hong Kong, we have some people to help. Like Hong Kong, we have got the Philippine domestic helper. In Australia, obviously, everything have to be done by ourselves. So that's another reason why my parents didn't want to come over here in the first place.
Wu walks us through the process by which he arrived at his current place of employment.
After my study, actually, I went back to Hong Kong to work for 6 months to join a big accounting firm called Pricewaterhouse. And then after 6 months, I think I can't stand the work pressure in Hong Kong, and I actually wanted to come back to Australia for good. So I just came back in, luckily at that time, I got a job in a small accounting firm in Crow's Nest. So I joined them and for the bit of, I think one a bit year. And then unfortunately at the time we experienced the recession we had to have in 1991. So at the time my firm said, look, they can't retain me because obviously they've got to downsize, and because of the recession, not much work. So I was asked to leave, and then I spent about a few months without work. And then after that, I have been able to apply for a job in my current firm, which is Richard Bob. I think that was in August 1991. And at the time, obviously, it was quite difficult to find a job. So I said, okay, if there's opportunity, I might as well grab it. And since August 1991 until now, I'm staying with this firm, Richard Bob. I became the partner in 1997.
When the firm first started, it was about 3 partners and 12 staff. And not much, as Wu tells us, has changed since then.
Actually, the firm was started by the founding partner who founded the firm in 1982. So when I joined in 1991, they already quite decent size. And after I joined the firm in 1991, I worked 6 years. And then until 1997, I became admitted as a partner. We still have 3 partners now. And then the firm is probably around the same size, about 10 staff. So we have been moving a few times. When we first joined the firm, we were in Castlereagh Street, and then we moved to O'Connell Street, a bigger firm, a bigger size office in 2003. And then in 2008, when the GFC hit, we have to downsize and move over here to the current location in Hunter Street. We are here since 2008, so for the very good part of 11 years.
Wu explains why downsizing for businesses occurred due to events like the recession and GFC.
At the time, when 1991, the famous Paul Keating basically said, okay, we have to have the recession. So at the time, it was a lot of business activity. They shrink because obviously our business rely on the client's activity. So the client business activity, the more they have, the more we'll be able to handle the tax return accounting work. So a lot of them, they just either retrench and then some of them they close down. So that's why they don't need the accountant, and then they don't need a lot of other tax work. So that's why we have to have this. If we don't have that work, we need to sort of reduce our staff level as well. So yeah, in overhead as well. So we have to reduce the size of the office and what have you. Same in the GFC, it is very much the same. A lot of business, they actually GFC was worse than the recession in 1991 because a lot of business actually, we witnessed a lot of the business, they really have to retrench a lot of staff, especially in our firm. A lot of us, our clients are property based, so developers and investors. So if the property affected, like a lot of the people, they cannot build and sell their property, so they'll affect a lot of their business.
He tells us about the cycles a firm like theirs goes through over time when it comes to the number of clients they have.
The clients basically disappear, and then either they reduce in the volume, and then we at the time when we moved to O'Connell Street, it was quite good because that's the reason why we moved from Castlereagh to O'Connell. That's between 2003, and that is a booming period. Obviously, as you know, at the time, it was probably was going up. And then a lot of people buy off plan, and then et cetera. I may have to share another story later on in the podcast about that point as well. And then since 2003, 4, and 5, and then building up all the way until 2007 and 8, then we hit the GFC. So it's in a cycle.
There is a reason why the accounting firm focuses on property, which Wu tells us.
The history of the firm is like the founding partner, Richard Bob, he's Lebanese. So he's got a lot of Lebanese clients to start with, and he founded the firm. So a lot of Lebanese, as you know, they are into the building game. So we still have a lot of clients. My current client, they are also Lebanese. And then we still have other clients as well, which is in the building game. Like we have Greek client, we have Italian client. But the main source of clients to start with are the Lebanese kind, and then there are a lot of building constructions and then property investment, and hence our firm are most of the clientele, they are property focused.
Coming up after the break, we'll explore why David Wu decided to start investing in property.
I mean, obviously, business is one thing. My father and my mother work very, very hard when they are young, and then based on this manufacturing and then import-export business. But once they've got generate a little bit more income, then they put money in the property.
Some of the properties he invested in over the course of his journey.
They promise to throw you up there, inspect the property, and then if you're not good, then they sign a contract. And then, if I remember still, it was a townhouse in Runaway Bay in the Gold Coast.
One of his worst investing moments, which turned out to be a great learning experience for him.
Obviously, at then it was a good price, but on hindsight, could have held on to it.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. For Wu, his parents had an impact on him getting into property, and he also tells us a bit about why he thinks property is so powerful.
It's probably has been the main game in Hong Kong because of the Hong Kong background. Hong Kong is a very tiny place, and there are a lot of people, so property become very scarce commodity. So a lot because of our family history. I mean, obviously, business is one thing. My father, my mother worked very, very hard when they are young, and then based on this manufacturing and then import-export business, but once they've got generate a little bit more income, then they put money in the property. And you see wealth grow substantially when you have the good property portfolio. It grows so rapid and so fast that you can't even earn that sort of money in your lifetime. In your it's chalk and cheese. So that's why that's started my interest in property, because obviously how much time you got maximum you got 24 hours a day. You know, even if you work 24 hours a day to earn your income, it cannot compare with the scale that the property can afford you. You can have, you know, one property, two property, and let it grow and let the income compound. And that's why the property investment is so powerful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And especially in Hong Kong, the price of property over there, it's just for a unit, it's just so high.
Hong Kong is a little bit unrealistic.
So that's very true. To give listeners maybe a perspective, how much would you say on average just a two-bedroom unit is worth now in Hong Kong, say, in comparison?
Depends on the location, I suppose. If you're in a good location, a two-bedroom unit, in Australian dollar term, you're looking at $1.5-2 million.
Yeah, that's what I heard as well, and it's fascinating because like,
and the size is small. I tell you, and the size don't think about the size in two bedroom. It's about, you know, here maybe about 80-90 square meter. No way, in Hong Kong two bedroom unit we're looking at about 50-60 square meter max.
That's what I hear as well. So it's like, wow, you don't get very much there, and that's probably why I think a lot of people, especially from Hong Kong and China, prefer sort of to purchase property in Australia, because you get land, you know, for that kind of money. If you sold up your units, however many you have, you could easily buy yourself, you know, many, many houses here.
Absolutely right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So after the Hong Kong experience, obviously when I come over here, it's looking at the property here as well. So I'm exposed to people's investment, and then I find, okay, cool. I mean, property investment is not bad. So actually my parents start investing in property, and then I also personally start looking at investing in property.
Wu's first property was quite a surprising one and gave him great experience when it came to property investing.
First of all, it is my home here in Australia. Obviously, it was near my father's place. So we actually bought a rundown property, and we actually built our home back in 1992. It was quite a daunting experience because we have no experience. We have to rely on the builder that's referred to us. Actually, the builder is also the builder who sold the property to my parents. So, okay, we bought a property run down, and then we have to demolish it. And at the time, we didn't demolish it. There's a situation where people want to buy a property. It was a Jeep property, which is a weather board roof and what have you. I don't know that term, but then they actually literally come to move the whole property on a big truck and moved it away.
I didn't realize it was still possible in Sydney. I know they do in Queensland a lot, but not in Sydney.
Because some people buy it, and then it was, I still remember it was very, it was early morning because they had to do it when the road is clear, no traffic, it was done. And then the whole thing, they move it on a very big truck and move it away. So instead of demolishing it, the whole house moved away. Then we start a plan, then build, and what have you. So that's why I've got the experience. I think to buy land and build, you have the instant equity, because obviously we look around to look at buying houses, but then the prices, it's much more expensive than the one that we spend. Obviously, it depends on how much money you prepare to spend, how good are your finishes. But then I still believe this first property experience gave me some good insight into, you know, to buy and build compared to just the buy of finished products. And that's my first property exposure. It's in Blakehurst.
So it's a really, really good area down there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, near my father's place. And then obviously, because that's my first home, so we spent a lot of time. But then it's not easy job, because at that time we called the owner builder. So we have to do a lot of stuff, and then we have to keep the builders doing the job. We have to keep on chasing them up, and then do a lot of running around, choosing the material, and it's a lot of hard work to be an owner builder. Yeah.
So how long did that process take from start to finish, if you remember?
About 12 months.
That's a reasonable amount of time.
Reasonable amount of time, yeah. Yeah. The delay is basically from the neighbor because the plan is to go to council, and then they don't like this, they don't like that. And then also afterward, we need to build a fence in the front and then also get some objection from the neighbor. So, I mean, that's the only delay. Otherwise, the process is quite smooth. And the builder is good. I mean, he worked hard for us, and then etc. So, I mean, 12 months is not too bad in the scheme of things, yes.
Is that still your current home, or have you...
Yes, it is. It is.
Wu goes on to tell us whether he has been holding on to his properties as he did with his first one, or buying and selling.
Bit of both. That's the actually my father, when after he migrated here, he purchased some units in Hurstville, and at the time it was quite good. We had the intention of holding it for long term. Then my father is that type of person who, when he see profit, he want to realize it. So, and then unfortunately at that time we sold all the property. I think I remember at that time when we bought in 1992, and when we sold in 1997. So at a decent profit, but then obviously with hindsight, if you could have kept it until today, it will be much different. It was just this different ball game.
He takes us through a journey of other property investments that he's done, from one in Queensland to another one in New South Wales.
After my home, obviously, and then I am looking at buying property. We bought property in Queensland at the time. You know, I don't know whether you remember, probably you're too young. There's a company called Young & Co. They promise to fly you up there, inspect the property, and then if you're not good, then they sign a contract. And then if I remember still, it was a townhouse in Runaway Bay in the Gold Coast. So me and my wife grew up there, and then sounds good. And then we bought it, and with bank loan. And then we held it for, I think, 4 or 5 years at a time, and then because of the distance, we couldn't look after it because obviously it's in the state. So we have sold it, and that's my second venture in the property. And then we also purchased one property in Bankstown, also around that time, and then also we held it for 4 or 5 years, and then we sold it. I think it's mainly because at the time the return is not that good, and then we want to use the money for other purposes. And then my third attempt is in Rockdale. At the time, it was actually market was on the move up. It was 2002, and my real estate agent friend bought one there of the plan, and I said, "Oh, if he buy one there, it can't be wrong." So I just borrow him and buy one there. That was it was in Rockdale Princess Highway. It was quite good. And then I held it for, I think, around 8 years. It was 2002, and then we go through, and then we went through the GFC, and then 2008, and then I have to sell in 2000. And I think we sold in 2010 because obviously because of financial situation. So I've got to realize it, and I've got to move on. So, but again, with hindsight, I were able to hold on to that. So now, it was a one-bedroom, one-study unit. I bought it for $350 off the plan and sold it for $360. It's a pretty even. But now, how can you buy a one-bedroom unit in Rockdale at that price?
Wu tells us more about his worst investing moment, which was the Rockdale property, and elaborates on why he purchased and sold it.
That is absolutely the worst one. It is actually I think the lesson to learn is basically you buy over the plan, it's okay, and you buy on a rising market, it's okay. But then I suppose lesson learned is when bad times come, when bad times hit, I think you have to have the holding power, you have to have the determination and mindset to say, look, this is your original purchase, or what is it, what's the purpose for it, if it's a long-term investment or just buy and flick. And I suppose whether depends on whether you really have to sell. And with hindsight, I don't have to sell. But at the time, all factors point that you better sell and then move on. So I were able, actually, if at that time I can refinance, and then it would have been better off by not selling. The reason why I purchased is because I still think it is property for the long term is a good investment. So plus the agent at the time, he said it is a good purchase. And obviously, I basically, because he's got experience in the area, and then I think this shouldn't be too bad, and read it for long term. And then actually it was a good unit. I got good rent, and then it was a the architecture, and then the finish was good, and then the one bedroom size is good with a good balcony overlooking the Rockdale Plaza, and then you can see the airplane coming up and down in the sky. So I think it's good buy. But as to why I need to sell, I think at the time I look at, because it was negative year, and then also the cash flow probably may be a little bit challenging. And also at the time, everything's going down. And then, you know, back in the GFC, the property got hit big time. And I've been through that, a lot of property have been dropping. So the fear is it will drop further. So that is the reason why I sell. Obviously, two things, cash flow and the fear that it's going to drop further. But that's actually, I suppose, not enough information at the time for me to make good decision. I could have done a bit more better research, and then instead of just following everybody people's on the sale. Not only me, and even my parents, they also sell their home in 2009 at the time. Obviously, and then it was a good price, but on with hindsight, could have held on to it.
I think that's all about hindsight, and I guess we all learn from those lessons, because now that we look back and go, oh, wow, you know, as you said, property is long-term and it's a long-term investment, but at sometimes circumstances, as you said, cash flow wasn't easy to maintain, then you have to make that decision. And I can relate to that, because my parents had properties in Birkenhead Point and also in the Sydney CBD as well. And timing-wise, they sold it at the wrong times because, yeah, one was at a loss and one was at a profit. So it ended up balancing. But imagine, I'm thinking, if they held on to both of them, gosh, the the properties that they now worth twice as much as what they bought. I think they bought it for about 300,000 back then, and now it's worth over a mil. it's painful, because I would have said to them, give it to me instead.
So I always told my dad, I mean, okay, some people sell because they want to realize profit. But then once you realize profit, what do you want to do with the money unless you put that into the property? But if that's the case, why sell? Because you incur transaction costs and stamp duty and whatever. So unless it is a switching of portfolio, like you switch from one area to another area, or you switch, or you're recycling, or you're just selling the old one and buy a new one, or you switch from residential to commercial. I mean, property is a long-term gain. And then at the end of the day, I mean, it depends on how not many, depends on not, it doesn't depend on how many property you've got, it depends on how long you hold on to it.
So, inspired by David Wu's property journey, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Investory. We'll discuss his strategy.
And second point is, I try to diversify into an area where you want to create equity instead of waiting for equity to come.
The importance of good structuring.
Yeah, not only a good land, they need a good structure, because obviously once you got into a wrong structure, then it will be very costly to unravel it.
The best advice he has ever received on his property journey.
There are people who seek advice, but they don't listen to the advice. They think they are better than the other expert.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.